Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. It is approximately 12-oh-something, and The Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. If you want to learn more about that organization, go to defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you would rather just give us a call, it's 804-644-5834 or send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. Well, here we are. It's June. It was 117 yesterday. It's probably going to be 117 tomorrow, but today it is bliss. Oh, my God. Step out the front door this morning and it was cool on the skin. Very nice. Bright, sunny, absolutely gorgeous summer day in Richmond, Virginia, the kind we don't see very often. So enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Today it's just me, no guests, and I wanted to talk about a few things that have been going on. But the primary issue for today's show, the primary topic, is the fact that this week, I think at farmers markets around the city, there will be basically a launch this week, this month. You know, some may have done it last week, but the launch of the ability to accept SNAP EBT swipe cards for purchases at the farmers market. And SNAP, if you don't know, stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It is the federal program that is available in all states of the United States. And EBT stands for Electronic Benefits Transfer. So back in the day, we used to call them food stamps. And maybe some of you listening were the beneficiaries of food stamps at different points in your life. I know that when my mother was a single mom with three daughters growing us up in Los Angeles, I remember distinctly going to the grocery store with those booklets of those very pretty little sort of look like pseudo money, sort of a cross between money and S&H green stamps or blue. There was some other kind of stamps I forgot now, but anyway. But those are, it's a very helpful program. It's been a critical program, I think, since the earliest days of the food assistance programs in the United States. I wanted to go into a little bit more history for you, but I think I'm not really going to be able to do too much of that for this show. But just, you know, we know, we talk, we hear about the liberal agenda and entitlement programs as though entitlements are bad things. And there's these great polarizing struggles or arguments, positions between those who believe that the government is only to provide protection for business, or, well, maybe they don't even protect, it's protection of property and sovereignty. And that's it. And on the other hand, when you seek to grow a nation the way that the United States has sought to grow itself as a nation, it also bears a responsibility to look after its people. And in those years of desperate poverty before World War II, it became clear that if there were not things done on a federal level, on a national level, to alleviate poverty and to alleviate the lack of jobs, that there were going to be real problems in the society here in the United States that were going to be insurmountable by popular entertainment. I feel like we're in a similar situation now where everyone's like, you know, I'll just chill. Everything is too hard. I'll just watch movies. I'll just, you know, listen to music and, you know, I'll do cultural things and I just won't sweat, you know, the problems that we have to deal with. Somebody will fix it and it'll get better and you know, we'll come out of this. But the fact is that the only reason these things do get better is because some people, and usually at a certain point they coalesce into some masses of people, stand up and demand that something be done. If you are going to disempower us from being able to look after ourselves, then you are going to have to take on the responsibility. And I think that was what we were looking at to a certain extent during those years. And really, subsequently, it's happened, I think it continues to happen on larger and smaller scales. So I think that one of the interesting things that evolves now that we're looking at this moment when food stamps, SNAP benefits will be accepted at farmers markets. In fact, there's an active concerted effort by the federal government to encourage people to use those benefits at farmers markets or at places where they are going to primarily find fresh, locally grown, really wholesome, vitamin-rich, nutritious foods that don't depend on, you know, fat and sugar and flour, starches, to fill you up. Because what's happened, of course, is we're no longer a society where the majority of people work in an agricultural or a manufacturing setting where it's labor for most of us all the time. And so that the consumption of these, you know, simple, massive belly-stuffing calories got burned off during the workday. And, of course, in those years, you could say that, you know, as people were building up to the car culture, people walked an awful lot more than they do now, certainly to and from school and to and from jobs. Our society doesn't really allow for that anymore. And so the consumption of calories to address poverty the way that we once did when cheese was made available and bread was made available and things like that, this is not appropriate anymore. And we are finding ourselves surrounded by the convenience foods and the low nutrition, you know, high filler foods that are making our society much, much bigger than we used to be. And I mean much bigger. If you go, I remember the first time I, as an adult, went to New York City and my sister took me to visit a place called the Little Red Schoolhouse. I think it was a Little Red Schoolhouse. Either that or it was a Little Red House. But it was in the heart of the city, and it was a building, a house that had been constructed, I think, in the 1700s. And I walked up to that building, and the front door was little. And I had to duck my head to go in. And the scale of everything in that house was little. And I'm not that tall by contemporary standards. I'm about 5'7". And here I was walking into a house where if I had been the man in that house, I would have been, you know, my head was almost, you know, approaching the ceiling. So clearly we've grown. Now, maybe there was an individual dynamic with that house, but I don't think so, because when I have gone to other places where the architecture is representative of you know, the 1700s, 1800s, and even to, the early 1900s, people have been smaller, by and large. We have become bigger. Some say it's because of hormones that have been injected into our food so that everyone gets a big fat chicken on the table every time they go to make one, so that our beef is fatter and bigger and you get more pounds of, you know, of marketable meat off of our domestic animals. So those hormones, those growth hormones, are making their way into our bodies and into the bodies of our babies as they are growing, and therefore our children are getting bigger and bigger. So in any event, lots and lots of ameliorating and contributing circumstances to the fact that we are finding that our old ways of eating are not very good, and that our old government ways of supporting those old ways of eating are having to change. And one of the changes now is that the government has decided to take a role in encouraging people to spend those assistance dollars on better food by allowing them to spend those dollars in farmers markets. And the farmers markets do, generally speaking, consist of food that has been grown very locally. The farmers and the gardeners who are selling food there are, you know, within 100 miles of the point of sale, which means the food gets picked in the morning and sold in the afternoon and potentially eaten that night for dinner. And so you're talking about maximizing the nutritional value of the foods that are being grown locally. And as more and more people, of course, are taking on organic practices, even if they're not officially certified organic, certainly the pressure of health concerns and public relations even is playing its role on people wanting to grow better, healthier, cleaner food, food that is not tainted with chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers and things like that that are synthetic in origin. So there we are. It's a good thing. From that direction of the conversation, it's a very good thing. One of the other things that's impacted by this plethora now of farmers markets that are available is the fact that we are looking at our communities, and particularly those communities that tend to rely more on assistance like SNAP benefits and TANF, which is, direct financial assistance to supplement, either a lack of an income or a very low income. And in those communities, food is one of those things that really suffers. And one of the reasons for that is because there tend not to be big grocery stores that provide, that wide range of good, healthy foods. They tend to be smaller, either mom and pop stores with a limited, amount of those foods, or even just flat out convenience stores. People who actually do their grocery shopping at convenience stores and tend to be buying processed, packaged foods. They're fast, they're tasty, and they're easy, and it's readily available, and your SNAP benefits will pay for them, intriguingly enough. So the change for these communities is that more and more people who are involved in, good food movements, in sustainable food practices, in better eating, are looking around and saying, if we can't get these foods in our grocery stores and my friends can't get these foods in their communities, I live in these communities and can't get good food without taking three buses, and a friend, then it's a very good thing to see farmers market stands, community gardens, and all of these kinds of things, a new kind of urban agriculture beginning to develop itself. Will Allen, who is one of those people who has just inspired people all over the world, I realized finally, is not just because he's an urban gardener, and it's not just because he's a big hulking black man who you don't tend to identify with successful agricultural ventures in this country, especially as we are aware of the embattled black farmer dynamic that's being fought for by the organizations who are seeking to get compensation for the losses and the discrimination against black farmers throughout the 20th century. But Will Allen has been developing methods for not just urban gardening, but urban farming and urban production farming, so that, again, it's large-scale production of food locally. That food is grown right there, either in or adjacent to the community, and then is provided to the community. It is sold in their own market, and it's distributed through restaurants. They provide job training. They provide agricultural and agribusiness training. It's quite a recognition of the opportunity that there is that is economic, but is also philosophical, changing people's approaches to how they actually get the food from the ground to their table, into their bodies, and then how that changes the way you think in general about food and how it is, how we get it, and how it's beneficial, and how we pass it on to our children. So all of these good ideas are those that come to the issue of food now being, better food now being readily available, even in our poorest communities, that these foods, that every person in our communities across the board has the right to access, fine quality food. And I believe that that is true. If you can grow it and it is fine, then you should be able to find it in the market and it should be fine. And this is a great, great time. This month, June, is really nice because we've come through the early spring vegetables and fruits and things, and we're moving into the really lush production of summer. And the tomatoes are going to start coming into the markets. And the tomatoes are not just going to be, you know, those beautiful, big, fat, red, juicy things that we count on for our sandwiches and chopping up with our chorizo and maybe scrambling with the eggs or, you know, on the side. Or, oh, my God, that ever-loving traditional favorite, a tomato sandwich, you know, bread, mayonnaise, and a big, fat, thick slice of tomato. Boy, these are good memories, don't you think? So, but there are other gorgeous tomatoes out there. There's yellow pear tomatoes. There's round, low acidic, you know, yellow tomatoes. There are zebra striped tomatoes. There's, you know, purple heirloom. There's a Paul Robeson, you know, tomato. There's, you know, there's just amazing kinds of tomatoes out there. They start from seeds, and you have the power. You get seed, you get soil, you get sun, you got, you know, earth, and, you know, you got a Paul Robeson tomato bush growing in your yard. That's a pretty remarkable thing. And seeds are, you know, cost a few dollars. And that's another thing. SNAP benefits can be used to purchase not just food, not just the produce and the vegetables and, you know, and specialty foods that you take home and prepare for meals, but you can also buy seeds and food plants with those SNAP benefits. The idea here is not just to help people, you know, get that next meal. It's also, I think, to demonstrate that there is a capacity to be very flexible based on your household's needs. You can buy foods that you can prepare much more quickly at home and produce really good, wholesome meals, but there are also the ability to, if you decide that you actually want to grow these things at home and grow the things that you like, you can do that too. So it's a really gorgeous way to think about assistance, about, you know, going on, we used to say, you know, being on welfare and getting food stamps. And that's got such a heavy, you know, a heavy sound to it for a lot of people. A lot of people don't even want you to know that they are getting that kind of assistance, that they are struggling in that way financially. For other people, it's been generational poverty, and this is something that they understand as a part of their daily lives. And so long as the economy and circumstances don't actually permit, you know, whole communities to get themselves out of poverty, that the jobs are not there, that the mechanisms for people to become self-sustaining are not themselves sustained or sustainable in our society or in our cities, in our communities across the country, then the assistance that they do get should be a point of pride that they are able to get that and that they are able to use it in order to improve their situation instead of sort of it becoming such a burden that they are pushed further into poverty or further into food need, that our poorest children are our most obese children. You know, that's an absurdity. It's a profound absurdity that they then are the people with the worst health situation because their nutrition is the poorest. Well, that just doesn't make any sense. And so I'm really pleased that you know, I can participate in this process too. Some of you may know that I'm also the farmer's market manager at Birdhouse Market. And so on a daily basis, you know, I talk to the farmers, I talk to the producers of specialty foods, I talk to the people, the customers who come in, and get a real sense of how farmers markets have now gone from being a luxury thing, that your wealthier neighbors, you know, go to some cool farmers market and get some really groovy specialty stuff. Farmers markets are now becoming staples. Just as they are staples for the farmers who are selling the food, they are becoming staple stops for people when they're doing their food shopping. It's becoming something that they rely upon. And I'm sure that grocery stores are feeling a little bit of the pinch, but that's okay too. Because we're really looking at our societies being much more complicated and that the ways in which we access our food is going to be complex as well. Food delivery systems, food growing systems are complicated because they're now so intertwined with everything. You can't talk about food without talking about oil and energy, which means, you know, you got to pay attention to the wars abroad and then bring it right back home, right? We talk about the war on our communities, the war on the Black community in terms of the prison industrial complex. The social problems that we are dealing with at home are inextricably linked to those things that we often think we don't have any power over: foreign policy, corporate business interests, jobs going overseas. All of these sort of bigger than me issues can be very directly tied to something as simple as, you know, being able to go to a farmer's market and buy a couple of apples and some homemade chocolate, making that good lettuce. Let me take just a moment to let you take a breath, let your ears take a little respite, and let you know that you are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. I'm your host, Anna Edwards. This is The Defenders Live. We come to you every Monday from 12 to 12:30. And occasionally we're repeated. I'm not sure when anymore. I think it's Tuesdays at 2, but I've heard also that it's sometimes earlier in the day, maybe around noon. So it's delightful to be able to talk to you about these issues and things like food deserts and solutions to food deserts in our communities. Another time I probably would like to be able to bring farmers into the show to be able to talk about the economics of farmers markets for them. The fact that, we were once upon a time a nation of small farmers. Everyone grew their own food, and if they were big enough, then they contributed to the larger food system. During the war, people, stopped growing food. The large-scale farmers stopped growing food and began producing, strictly for supporting the war effort. And then corporate farming took over, and small farmers have been, disappearing. And that has contributed this other intriguing situation, if you don't know that much about it, and that is the supplements to farmers. And so in any event, it just sort of clues you in, and I'll happy to clue you into the fact that more of these large-scale issues are tied to our local concerns. So as you are exploring, the farmer's market in your neighborhood over the next month, and hopefully beginning to make that a regular part of your, food and nutrition regimen, I hope you'll think about that and, know that we're really pleased that the population who's going to be utilizing that is going to be expanded by those who are using assistance, SNAP, EBT assistance, and other benefits are provided by our government at our demand. Don't forget that. This was not just some like bright idea that a government official had. This has been at our demand systematically. So we are meeting our people's needs as is appropriate for a nation that seeks to maintain itself as a powerhouse, right? Okay, so that leads to another issue, and we'll talk about that in another show. Sustaining the American way, using 25% of the world's resources, to support 5% of the population. Ha! So there you are. Anyway, Juneteenth is coming up this weekend, and I wanted to make sure and get that in. Lots of us will be participating. It's an important event. Once again, I will say the burial ground is free of asphalt. If you have not driven by, you got to go see it. Olegba Folklore Society, Janine Bell, has been a part of the Slave Trail Commission almost since its inception, and she has played her part, making the burial ground a part of the night walk along the Trail of Enslaved Africans. That will also happen this Saturday. The Black History Museum has an exhibition about families and wisdom, the nobility of family wisdom in Black families. That's going on through July 1st. Coast. The Virginia Friends of Molly has an exhibit at the Black History Museum as well. There's just a lot of things going on, and as always, we want you to stay in tune. Consider participating in the community organizing committee around the Richmond African Burial Ground so that your voice can be a part of the memorialization and the longer-term plans for the development of the National Slavery Museum here in Richmond, where it belongs. So I just want to say again, thank you for tuning in to the Defenders Live. If you want more information about what goes on, a couple of the different sites in terms of farmers markets, obviously there's birdhousemarket.blogspot.com, the market umbrella, which covers four markets in town. There's the market at St. Stephen's. There's the Tricycle Gardens has farmers market stands associated with some of its community gardens and urban farms. There's a wealth of resources out there regarding foods, and I look forward to running into you at one or the other of these markets. I also look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks for tuning in to the Defenders Live. Visit our blog, defenders.fje.blogspot.com, and I will talk to you next week. Thanks for tuning in.